Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
I know you're asking today, how long will it take? Somebody's asking, how long will prejudice blind the visions of men? I come to say to you this afternoon, however difficult the moment,
yes, sir,
however frustrating the hour, it will not be long.
No,
because truth crushed earth.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diaspora, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to those ancestors because over time, they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to those ancestors because they are the ones who pass that information on to us. And so we pour libations to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation, too, to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
You are listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing.
Hotel family, this is your brother Kwasi Kraft. Welcome to Warriors Way, continuing the fight. I hope we find everybody well. Tonight's show, we're going to be talking about the gun violence in Milwaukee. We've had several deaths. I think we had 19 a weekend ago. And every week, we hear of something tragic or something happening. What do we do? We have a new mayor. Of African descent, black male. Same with the chief. He's been there a couple of years. Was an intern chief. Now they made him the current chief. Jeffrey Norman, and our newly appointed mayor, Mayor Cavalier Johnson. And then we have Sheriff Luke, who also have ran for mayor, but he's been the head sheriff here for a couple of years now. And word is that he might be leaving, but I believe the person that would be stepping in behind him may be a black female. And so when you think about everything that's going on, you talk about the people that are in positions of power, or look like positions of power. You know, we had a President Obama that was in a position of power, but he wasn't able to get anything done because Republicans blocked everything. And so you have a lot of people mixed emotions in regards to the things that he was able to accomplish and the things that he was not. And so, looking at this murder rate, you know, I want to talk about a number of different things. And one of the things I want to talk about, when I was looking up, you know, the city and talk about the most, the highest murder rate, and, you know, we would hear, you know, when the former President Trump was running for office. And he would always make a comment about how bad Chicago was and that the former President, Barack Obama, hasn't done it. And, you know, that's a pretty great story. And we hear about a lot of the murders and the things that happened in Chicago. But, you know, when I was looking up the highest homicide rate, you know, and all that stuff is based on the size of area per capita per 100,000. And Chicago wasn't number one. But yet, you know, how people talk about things, you know, it came out that way. It appears to me that way. You know, just thinking. But again, you know, what it was. I was listening to some Dr. Amos Wilson. And he's had a lot to say about homicide and black on black crime. And he framed a number of different books. And I'm just going to just read some of the things that he's talking about. Just so, and this is from a blueprint for black power. Now, quote, some people think our problems can be described in 25 words or less. You don't have to write a library for solutions, issues, because some people look at our problems as a small-minded people. Now, we are complicated as any other people, and we sometimes underestimate how we should address ourselves. Now, other nations, other people require libraries to deal with their issues, so do we. Now, trying to integrate and merge with our enemies. Let me say that again. Trying to integrate and merge with our enemies is not going to solve our problems. It's not going to happen. It is a fantasy that we one day will be one with these people. Now, why would we want to be murdered with the worst criminal, murderer, rapist, thief on this planet? We must question what our motives are. Now, it is a fantasy that has kept us from taking care of business for a long time. Now, you want to talk to us about value, population control. Now, we can solve it by reducing the European population, get rid of all of our overproof. You know, they tell us we don't have enough to support ourselves. It's not about love, it's about power. And our power, that's what we're dealing with. We've been taught to not to pursue it because it's simple. Yet, the battery without power is dead. And we need to recognize ourselves and organize consciousness of our personalities and culture and see them as an instrument of power. A good, very organized one to approach the world. And we need to create one to keep that event, you know. And so I really do get that. And you know, it's so bothersome and troublesome to hear about a lot of the recent incidents that goes on in Milwaukee. But when you look at why this happened, you know, there's a like it's a places that if these homicides continue to escalate is because of the socio-economic violence that we've been suffering. The social system is just set up in a manner in which we're being utilized in every aspect. Like violence in our education, you know, we're not being told to. And you know, when you look at the job, you know, I mean, it is just so difficult for us to live, sustain a life. And yet, when you look at the numbers of people that can't work a job because there's no job for them. But yet, we seem to think that we're going to be able to get a job after we get this education. And the statistics show that there's not a enough jobs for a lot of the white people. And so, in turn, why do you think that they're going to put put us before them, jobs? And that's not going to happen. As a matter of fact, one of the things that late Dr. Wilson talked about is that, you know, they've been doing this for a long time, where when they bring people in, because we are just no longer using, they bring people in from foreigners to take these jobs. You know, and where are we going? We're going into the prison. You know, so there's a lot of issues that we need to look at. And, you know, when I talking about some of the things, and I said made reference to violence, you know, I said, you know, we talk to this violence just begets violence. So the violence that begets violence, and how wild it's engaged, is unreal religion. You know, the violence against black people, right up to the very, you know, enslavement. This hasn't stopped. And from the very first moment that we came into contact with those people, the violence and lacing, you know, white people, the levels are not only the volume of slavery violence, the patronage after Reconstruction and so forth, the volume of Jim Crow, the violence of lynching, and the violent economic deprivation, violence, the assassination of black culture, of black characters, violence in terms of injustice, you know, the violence, miseducation, and so on. So we're dealing with so much, but yet we're trying to put everything in one little fixed form. You know, if we get more police, and we've always found that having more police is not the solution to the problem. And they've always known that. It's not, you know, the cities that have the highest crime rates are generally areas where they have one of the lowest socioeconomical situation. Those people are deprived. They don't have the means to make basic essentials. You know, they're just lacking so much. And so we really have to look at this. And so I have a friend of mine that's here, a brother. I won't mention his name. I don't have to always. I want people to speak freely and stuff like that. And it's not that we're intimidated by using names, but. What we want to do is we want to just you know, get a different perspective. My brother, what do you think in regards to, you know, a lot of the violence, the uptick in violence that you're seeing in Milwaukee? And we have different homicides that's been going on, and, you know, and so much of it is with our young people. You know,
I think it's based on a lot of
is basically economics. Neighborhoods where we live, urban jobs, like you said earlier. A lot of people of color not being utilized for the jobs. Most of the jobs, of course, are either out in the suburbs or shipped down to Mexico or whatever.
Why do you think that is? Economics is
based on racism. Dollar bill itself, economics is based on racism. It always has been. Slavery. It's just been tuned up more, perked up more, and adjusted with our society and with the decades of the industrial age. Now we've got the technology age. So no matter what age we are, we're going to always be into, it's always going to be racist.
You know, it's something how a lot of people try to say that racism doesn't have anything to do with what's going on today. Why do we keep talking about it? Why do we keep bringing it up? And I was listening to some quotes and things from Dr. Amos Wilson, and he talked about the fact that we have a different consciousness going on because we don't see a lot of what's going on, and we don't see the value in what we don't understand the power. We are a powerless people, but yet when we decided not to ride the bus, we shut down the city,
right?
And so we don't understand the power of us coming together. And so many times we think of individualism, but the power that we bring when we do things as a group. But I think we get one of the things that he was saying is that he thinks that we get so trapped in the way of thinking individuality. I can do it, you can do it, this kind of thing. But, it's when we come together and we do things. We shut down cities. And we've done those things multiple times. And, when you hear about these things, I can't think of what day that is where a lot of Hispanics, they will, what day is that where they won't show up for work? I can't think of what day that is.
Yeah, they had it here once.
They had that here, on several different occasions.
Yeah,
but I remember where they, they basically shut down the city, but they all came out. Hey, they're not going to work. They were fighting for better wages, equal opportunities, and so many areas in the workplace. And so people understand that, they come together and they stand out. And I think that's scary for a lot of people. And so when we look at a lot of the things that's going on here, we have to, the violence that goes on, they've always had it where they want to make us believe that there's something wrong with us. There's an evil inside of us. That makes us do these things. But, the most evil people on the planet, are the people that have been oppressing us all this time. And when I say that, when I talk about it, we didn't see nobody's kids as alligator bait. We didn't make clothing and stuff out of their skin. That wasn't something that we did. We didn't do, all these lynchings. It was just so many things that were so commonplace, and that we've learned so much from the horrific things that have been done to us. But at the same time, they've taught us to worship them. And so many of us have wanted to try to be so much like them that we have taken on their identity. And in doing so, we become our own oppressors. We become allies with our own oppressors. And that was a lot of what Dr.
energy pushing talk about. So because we're doing all that, running into these different issues where we don't see each other, how we speak, we look at each other, and you know, there's a fear factor. I mean, because we don't know ourselves. And so what do we do? How do we handle this gun violence? You know, for me, you know, I try to teach people that there's other solutions. You don't need a gun to protect yourself. And if we were to put these guns down, but at the same time, when you think about it, the gun, the shootings, and so forth, what do people want to do? Our first line of defense is call the police. Well, we're not real happy about calling the police, but we most definitely believe it. But when I say we're not real happy about calling the police, it's because we don't get a fair shake. And so, you know, there's just so much, you know, what happens in regards to how we see how to handle a lot of these different issues. And so, it's scary. You know, I'm not going to deny that. I carry a firearm, not because, you know, I'm looking to shoot somebody, but I know that there are some people here that are wired differently. There's no reasoning or rationale with some people. And, you know, they recklessly shoot and do these horrific things to other people, but mostly the people that look like us, that are doing a lot of these killings. And like I said, it's an identity crisis. You know, right now we have people that, just to show you how much confusion is going on, we got people that think that they don't know who they are. They don't know if they're a boy. They don't know if they're a girl. They don't know if they're black. They have black skin. They have black curly hair, the mother is black, the father is black, but they decided that they want to change their identity. We got those kind of things going. But we have a whole list of issues, of identity crisis issues that's going on. When you continue to have those issues and confusions, and it just keeps going on, and then the way we deal with it, you know, we don't confront these things. What we tell people is like, you have the right to be confused. As a matter of fact, nobody can tell you that you can't be or be able to express yourself in that way, shape, or form. And so we're dealing with those things like that. And there's a lot of groups out there that benefit from this confusion that's going on. And so that's just an ugly situation. And so I just want to just talk about some of those different things. But before we do that, I didn't do ancestral profile. I'm going to do one in a minute. I just got into kind of talking about the topic, and I'm going to talk about the first female police officer. I'll say black police officer. I believe the first female police officer was a white female, and but we'll talk about that and, you know, the things that she went through. And so it's, and that's going to be a Georgia Ann Robinson. So I'm going to talk about her. Now, Georgia Ann Robinson, she was born May 12th, 1879. She succumbed. Became one of our ancestors September 21st, 1961. Now, she was an American police officer and a community worker
who was the first African-American woman to be appointed police officer at the Los Angeles Police Department. She was one of the first black police women to be hired in the country. She joined the force in 1916 as a volunteer. She was a jail matron and was appointed as an officer in 1919. And that was due to a lot of the men that were fighting in World War I. And so there was a shortage of police officers. And so she got in. Now, she worked on the juvenile and homicide cases as well as cases with black women. She often referred the people she came into contact with to social agencies. Now, her police career ended when she permanently lost her sight after being injured by a prisoner. Now, Robinson was also an activist. He founded the Sojourner Truth Home, a shelter for women and girls while working on the force. After retiring, Robinson continued her community activism, working with the NAACP, volunteering in shelters, campaigning in desegregated schools and beaches. She was married to Morgan Robinson and her daughter, Marion. She died in Los Angeles at the age of 82. In her early life, she was born in Louisiana, May 12, 1879. She was brought up first by her older sister, then in a convent. She moved to Kansas when she was 18, working as a governor. She married Morgan Robinson there, and the couple moved to Colorado and then to Los Angeles. In 1916, when the Los Angeles Police Department was facing a shortage of officers after many enlisted to fight in the World War I, Robinson was recruited to leave her community and work at and join the Los Angeles Police Department as a volunteer. Now, she worked as a jail matron for 3 years, and around that time, African-American club women were working to get black women hired by the police. Organizations like the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs believe having black female police officers would both protect black women and girls from white male violence and would help combat harmful stereotypes about black women being more sexually active and available. And so you got to understand, back in that day, white males would openly just rape black women and not be prosecuted. So that was a big concern. And so, again, you know, when she talks about both to protect black women and girls from white male violence, that's what she was doing. Now, there were strict requirements for becoming a policewoman, such as being between the age of 30 and 44, being married and holding a degree in education, nursing. Robinson was 36 years old, married, and had a degree in nursing. So she met all the requirements. On June 10th, 1919, Robinson was officially sworn in as a police woman. Now, Robinson was the first black woman to be sworn in LAPD and one of the first African-American police women in the country. Now, Robinson worked with the white female police woman, Alice Stebbins Wells. The LA Police Department saw the hiring of black women as a type of police reform because they could deal with the black female offenders. Thus, Robinson primarily worked on juvenile and homicide cases as well as cases involving black women. Instead of arresting the women and girls that she came into contact with, now Robinson often sent them to social services, and there was an early attempt at police reform. And one of her first times as an LA police officer, she sought to help the black community. Robinson often allowed youth she met on the job to temporarily stay at her own home when they had nowhere else to go. Now, through juvenile cases for her specialty, Robinson dealt with any situation she encountered on the job, and where there was a car crash on the 18th of September in 1918, Robinson rescued two injured women and sent them to the hospital for treatment. Over the course of her career, she also administered first aid to a juror who collapsed in court, rescued kidnapped babies, and search for kidnapped girls. As a police woman, Robinson was paid for her work. However, she was not given a gun. She was not given a gun. Imagine that. In handcuffs or a police car. Nevertheless, she still succeeded in taking police to, people to jail when it arose. Now, Robinson's police career was cut short in 1928 when a prisoner banged her head into a jail bar, causing her head injury so severe that she permanently lost her sight. Now, 12 years after she began her career with the Los Angeles Police Officers Retired. And so, you know, one of the things that she was in Jet Magazine in 1964, and I think she said, "I have no regrets. I didn't need my eyes any longer. I have seen all there was to see." And that was published in Jet Magazine. And so she was a true activist. And so when you think about, you know, the things that we had to go through as black officers, her not having a gun, not having handcuffs. You know, I mean, her authority was so diminished, but at the same time, people understood her attitude, her good heart, that she was out there trying to help people. And I find that to be true with so many people. I think they seem to lose sight of what they really need to be doing. But again, this great ancestor, Georgiana Ann Robinson, he was our first black police officer. He died September 21st, 1961, at the age of 82. And so that is our ancestral profile. Okay, so interesting that you talk about the things that she went through. And to this day, you know, much has not changed in regards to, we do carry guns. We are able to arrest people and so forth. But, you know, there were different times and places where we still had some restrictions. I was the first black officer in the city of Cudahy where I worked. And to this day, I got hired. And so there is a difference in how we're treated. And, you know, your authority is independent. You know, the citizens on the street, they didn't have a problem, so to speak, as far as my competency and so forth. But they also understood how the system works. They knew that I didn't have my final. And like other officers that I worked with. And so that was, that was just a difficult situation for me to deal with. But again, we want to talk about the problems that we're dealing with, you know, in Milwaukee, with the violence, with the homicides. And, you know, and I had mentioned early, you know, and I was reading some things from the late Dr. James Wilson, and he talked about the hidden keys, civil rights movement, fighting to be free from our oppressors. Now, to be free is to be like one oppressor. One day, one becomes like their oppressor. One becomes self-oppressor. And one becomes an ally in the oppression of one's own. Thinking about that, this is one of his quotes in the that we identify with the killer, identify with the people kill us, we ultimately must engage in suicide and self-destruction. This is often what happens. There were too many who read freedom to be like white folk, but then it's oppression. You know, so when you think of everything that we're kind of joining that bandwagon, we're losing the fight. And so when we look at the job scenario, economic violence in our communities, a lot of people talk about it. I'm listening to a show where Dr. Howard Fuller was, Dr. Will Rogers' show. Yep. He talked. He gave a number of different stories about issues, what we need to do, what we need to combat a lot of these issues. And, you know, and the education, you know, the things that we lack so much. But he also had made a point about, you've heard this many a time, that when you teach a man to fit, he also said, well, why can't we both? We can also feed his anti. You know, and so many times, you know, like, do one or the other. We do one or the other and we kill it. But, you know, they're still lacking. You know, and so we need to. And, so I maybe think, because a lot of times we get to thinking that because we're in this where we think that we're better off than others, and we're actually not much better off. They know where they're standing. We feel we get position, but we also have limitations. We have a lot of limitations. We see that when we go places, daily places, that basis. We see that our financial situation, and again, you know, Dr. Amos Wilson, when you talked about us not understanding power that we're a powerless country. You know, our conscience, how we, I mean, because we don't act accordingly, because we can't identify with who we really are. And, you know, when people talk about are we still being affected by slavery, and, you know, for people here, but and one of the things that he brought up, what language do you eat? What food do you eat? How do you dress? You know, our dress is not that of African people that we were taken from. Our language is not that of that's taught us. You know, so there's so much of our history, the God that we worship, is that of African. And so we can go on. So we are speaking a language that's foreign to us, and we're trying to navigate through that. But these other people, Asians, Jewish, Arab people, here with them. They're here with their religion. They weren't stripped of it. They came here with this, and they also received reparations. So we are, not that we can't get these things, but we have kind of backed away from wanting to be identified as African. And I noticed that, you know, I noticed that in a lot of conversations. I have conversations with a lot of people, and they talk about, you know, they don't want to be identified as being African, black.
You know, but yet if you talk to somebody white, you know, like, oh, I'm Irish, I'm Italian, I'm from Italy, I'm from Ireland, and they will go back to their roots. And I'll tell them that, I'm African. And I say, no, you're African American. They want to make that strong distinction, let them know that I'm American first. My ideas, and this is where I need to get them. And that mindset, that consciousness of is eaten away at our core. And a lot of us don't realize that. And so I think when we aspire to move forward, we have all these different identity crisis issues, and you wonder why some of the things that are going on. This is a major part of the problem. Carl, I got you sitting here. I had asked you a few questions, and I just...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead. Go ahead.
When you say identity crisis, well, first of all, I want to ask you, what's your thinking on Black Lives Matter?
Well, my thinking on that is it is what it says. Our lives do matter. And I think when they fought it, like, that was the premises on it. That, you know, the killing of innocent Black people that were in the custody of law enforcement. And that's where a lot of this came into play, because we would see over and over again, you know, what was the situation with that... where the young man was selling some cigarettes and he was choked out by a New York police officer.
Well, Minnesota. Before that.
Before that.
Yeah. It's been so many.
But so we can go on when we're talking about little kids, elderly women
that
were killed for police officers.
Georgia.
It's just countless incidents. With Deanna Taylor, you know, sleeping in a bed, and, you know, they do a no-knock search warrant. They're in plain clothes, and they're at the wrong place, and they're at the door, and then they kick a door open, and her boyfriend fires a shot, and then they just start shooting and stuff, and they end up killing her. And they wanted to charge him. You can go with Orlando Castillo that was killed in his car. Explaining, his girlfriend was explaining that he's a licensed gun owner. He has his carry permit. He does have a gun, and bam, the cops started shooting. And there was a little baby. So, you know, the kids are traumatized even more. There was recently I was watching on social media where Dr. Rashad Ritchie. And I hope I didn't say his name wrong, but, you know, he talked about a lot of these incidents where the policing is just so how they target Black people. And he was talking about a place in Alabama, I said Coltrane, Alabama. And actually in New York. They were talking about one of the ways that they traumatized kids. They created a different law in New York that I believe you have to be, you can't arrest kids under 12 years old. And one of the reasons they started doing that was because 90% of the arrests in New York on juveniles were Black and brown kids. 90%. And so basically you're traumatizing these kids and you're criminalizing them at a very young age. So you're setting them up to be victims in this system. And, you know, they said, we're going to have to do some things different. But that's one of the reasons stuff like that. So when you talk about, you know, how we are being targeted by law enforcement, and that's why I believe that Black Lives Matter started, because when we call for assistance,
we usually end up dying from asking law enforcement people to help us. And we find the same situation, but with very different outcomes when that person happens to be white. I don't care if that person shot at a police officer or even shot a police officer. And we've had those things happen where they didn't shoot that person and found ways of taking that person in with no harm. There was an incident in Milwaukee a couple years ago where a white male was shooting at officers, and officers responded. Actually, he was just shooting on the roof. And long and short of, they got him to come down, he would not give up his gun. And some officer snuck around and tackled him, and then they took him into custody. You know, would the same have been done for somebody black? So many times we get black people where somebody say, I thought he had a gun, he was just on his cell phone. You know, or he was waving his hand up and he had his wallet. But we have so many cases like that. And so I think in 2020, we have over 200 black people, unarmed black people that were killed by police. In nonviolent confrontation. You know, and so we have people walking around, the police walk up to them and ask them, hey, what's going on? What are you doing here? And stuff. So one, the probable cause wasn't necessarily there at all, but, you know, they feel they need to do their job. And for whatever reason, they go and say that I was in fear for my life, and then they had to escalate to a deadly force situation. And so I can attest to a lot of these different things. Because, you know, I was in law enforcement and I saw how these things went down. And when I was in law enforcement, I personally felt that I was going to make a difference and I was going to stop a lot of the injustices that was going on. And I was able to do some of those things. But it is not just law enforcement. It's a bigger picture than that. You know, it's the court system. It's the hospitals. It's all of it. When you talk about George Floyd, he said that he died of fentanyl. Who said that? The coroner. You know, I know a lot of times, you know, when people get to the crime scenes and the coroners, you know, the medical examiners, when they get there, a lot of times when they see the scene and they know that the body's been moved based on what they say happened here, there, and stuff like that. But, you know, they keep their mouths shut. You know, there are so many things and situations where people won't say what they say or say the truth about it because, like I said, it's part of the system, you know, in which if you want to maintain control, you know, lying is what they do best. And I won't say that we give them passes on that, but we just lose that battle. I hope that answers somewhat.
Yeah, but another thing, okay, I know that Black Lives Matter, you know, first year or so was pretty popular. And I was watered down, even in the suburbs. You don't see the signs anymore like you used to. You notice that out of Whitefish Bay, out in Cedarburg, you really see them in a city. So is it something like a fad that happened and now it's gone? Somebody else gets shot again or killed? Can you bring the signs back up?
Well, you know, I think what's going on that they're desensitizing us to the public, you know, and one of the ways that they do that is they throw these numbers out and they talk about the senseless violence, and it is senseless violence that goes on in the community, but at the same time, they're not talking about why this happened. They know the solution to why this happened, and I mean, because it's been the same in other communities, province communities that happen all over the country. They know why this happened, and it's usually to the economic violence and other social issues that plague the community that are targeted for the black and brown people. And so with that being the case, and now those things going on and not getting the help that they need, this is a result of it. You know, they can fix these things, but we're not worthy. And they do that by allowing things to happen. And when they do happen, you know, one of the things that we hear black people say it all the time, We are our worst enemy. You hear them say that all the time. You know, and I'll sit down there and I'll tell them the way they articulate the news, the way they, that is all strategy. That is all strategy to get us to think a certain way, to get us to feel a certain way about this and that. And so we have less confidence in another black person to resolve an issue. And so one of the things that we look to do, for the most part, a lot of us, we want to engage with the people that create the problems for us and to help come up with a solution. I did a show a week ago, and I talked about the crime statistics and the wrongfulness that's going on in regards to police violence and how they oversee it. And so you have the police that investigate crimes by police, and that's part of what their job is. And so the same people that are committing the crimes against them, we have the same government that set these situations up to investigate and come up with the solution for it. And so to me, that's a conflict in itself. You know, you're not going to have the same person, you know, investigate themselves and come out with the outcome that is, you know, when that person wrongfully did something here and there to, you know, numbers of people continuously and so forth and get the proper response. But again, it is what they do and how the system is set up. So we're just not going to win in a lot of these situations, and we don't. You know, there was on social media, they talked about the, a young, not a young lady, but an older lady. She was in her 60s. She was stopped in Alabama, and a white police officer stopped her, and she said, "Why'd you stop?" She was like, his response was, "Hey, I'm the law. I can stop whoever I want." Long and short of it, him and his partner, they searched her car. They took her medication, and she had her $5,000. That was her life savings in her purse, and they took that. And she made a complaint. She wanted to get her money back and her medication. Long and short of it, that complaint is still going on. And those things happen quite a bit. And so when we talk about, you know, how we're being treated, when we say Black Lives Matter, you know, a lot of times when people talk about that, they talk about the death issues in regards to police, but there's so many other things that go on how we're being robbed. You know, there was in Alabama, these officers, they told of wrongdoings by other officers, where over 1,000 people were wrongfully convicted. You know, they had guns and drugs and other things that they would keep in a garbage bag at the police department, and they would use that to plant on people that they would come in contact with, and then get these people arrested. Who else was part of that situation? The city attorney. And so you have a whole host of people. So it's not like it's just the police officer. And the judge is the decent person, and he can figure out what's going on. Well, surely the judges know that something is wrong. And you can tell when somebody's lying. This is your job. But when you don't care, and this is, and you have a targeted people that you're looking to get, and this is what's going on, and we keep talking about, okay, let's get this situation. If we get the right person to speak for us, this, that, or whatever, we can get something done. Sometimes those things happen based on certain situations, but sometimes they don't. Because like we said, we're in a system that the numbers are stacked so greatly against us. And so we have to realize that, and we have to empower ourselves by knowing who we are. You know, this is one of the reasons they talk about the critical race theory, you know. I mean, because even to this day, they're talking about banning certain books like Richard Wright, Native Son. I think, if I got that right, it's Native Son. But so many books by our black ancestors that are out there that talk about the struggles and the things that they had to deal with. And a lot of what we're talking about then, we're still dealing with today. And they want to ban these books. They want to ban these books. And so what is that? You know, so you take, so what information are we going to be receiving? You know, that of our oppressors and, you know, where we end up worshiping the same people that create these problems for us. You know, and why? You know, what purpose is it? It serves a purpose to keep us in that state of confusion. When I said that we have no identity, we don't know who we are. You know, like I said, people wanting to be, I'm 7 minutes past that. let's go to a station break, and then we're going to come back and talk a little more. And I'm going to open up the line for questions and comments when we come back.
And the band played on.
You are listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing.
We have created a nightmare for our youth. And we talk so much about our youth until we forget that the youth did not make this world they are in. This world that our youth inhabit today was made by us and made by adults. If we gave them a different world to live in, they would behave differently. But when you make jobs for Koreans and make jobs for every other ethnic group but your own, when you let other ethnic groups ship out all of your wealth, when you let the only growth industry in your community become the selling of crack, then you will be killed by your youth. And you'll be terrorized by your youth. These youth are not crazy. These youth are not unusual. They're responding to economic imperatives. When you've let then another people take every industry and every job, the youth become very creative. And they decide then that they're going to figure out a way to get funds within the community. When you let them be fed these ideas of what it means to be a man or a woman, is as defining themselves in terms of what they wear, buying the most expensive junk and garbage produced by other people, and when you then promote this kind of value system and this kind of behavior system, and yet you will not produce for those appetites and those desires, then they will turn around upon you and eat you alive. It is not unusual. Men have always struggled over scarce resources. And resources have been made scarce in our community. And the only part of gold has been the selling of drugs. And when you have a gold mine, men will go to war over it. Yes, it's not a mystery. And when they go to war over it, they will shoot and kill, and they will destroy bystanders. Nothing unusual about that. Look at the millions and millions of people who were destroyed. Look at the millions of bystanders who were destroyed as the Europeans struggled over gold, when they struggled over markets, and people who got caught in the crossfires. Yet, you see, if we forget the history of these people, we will be too quick to condemn our youth and forget the role that we play in the life that they lead.
Hotel family, we are back to late Dr. Amos Wilson on, you know, his take on what is going on in Harrisburg, the violence. And so, again, you can see, and we talked about a state of consciousness that we've seen that to happen in regards to what we should be doing, who we are, where our power comes from. And as long as we don't realize those things, we're not going to go anywhere. We're not going to do what we need to do. Resolve these issues. And, you know, as a fighter, and, you know, my platform, Warrior's Way, continue to fight. I didn't start this fight, but I'm going to continue. So we stand on the great shoulders of ancestors that have been tried and tested, done so many things so that we can be here today and have the liberties that we have today. I mean, I'm my own home. Have a job that I mean, we can go back hundreds of years ago, and a lot of those things were impossible. We didn't have the everyday simple things in life that a lot of people have today. We weren't afforded those things because we were looked upon different, and that's constitutionally, you know, what we're viewed as three-fifths of human. And so you don't really have to go in, are looking at what's been going on and so forth. You look at the list. Look at the Declaration of Independence. You know, you look at the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, you know, 19th. And we can go on and on. You know? There are so many issues, just disparities in regards to how we're viewed and looked upon. But yet we want to qualify ourselves system that disqualifies us. And so I see that is our biggest fight. And one of the other things that they've always been able to do is, well, listen, I'm going to have a show. I'm going to get some of my religious brothers to speak on that. Whereas, you know, Dr. Amos Wilson, in conversation and a lot of his literature, he talks about, you know, us having our power. And, you know, and he made reference that, you know, a battery is power, a source of power, otherwise it's dead. But yet, they kind of talk to us as like sinful for us to seek power. And but yet, these other people have this power, and we're powerless people, so to speak. We're not, but minds of our consciousness tells us that we are. And so we have to look at things in a different way. So I think another example, Dave, he talked about, you know, places like Africa, you know, which is kind of all the mineral, gold, the wealth of the world. So Africa needs nothing, no one, but everybody's in our backyard. Other places are in there for gold, for oil, but and we have a very low percentage. How can you rob a person that's poor? They call us, what do they call us? I forgot the terminology that they call you. Third world country?
But yet
everybody's speaking.
I want to ask you, I know you play football online, football, some place football. We talked about this off here. Saying now, a lot of even NFL football players are saying that being treated like slaves by being during who can run the fastest, who can hit the hardest, and we're mostly being recruited just to be receivers. Not too many, you probably four or nine, but there's probably like one or two quarterbacks in the NFL at this point. That's incorrect.
I think we have quite a few bright NFL quarterbacks, coaches is what we lack the numbers in. But I know why you kind of bring that up, because we just talk about the disparity, and that's part of our mental psyche where we feel that we don't matter, that we don't count. And so a lot of the times when we have these different conversations, when we talk to each other, when we try to come up with solutions, and I have so many people, when we talk about the gun violence and stuff, a lot of people tell me, you need to get together effort and so forth, and then follow the blueprint that they kind of set up. But there's so many people situations in regards to what we need to do and to the violence we're talking about. There's an organization. Well, it's called the Education Fund to Stop Gun Violence. And it talks about, the root causes of gun violence. This is the root causes of gun violence. And so this is known for policymakers to address the social and economical inequities that are the causes, are the root causes of gun violence impacted in communities of color. And, Dr. Amos will talk about those things. But, I'm saying that the cause of gun violence includes income inequity, poverty, underfunded public housing, under-resourced public services, under-performing schools, lack of opportunity, and perceptions of hopelessness, and easy access to firearms at high risk. And so that's what we're dealing with. And, it's so troublesome to me that on the news they promote the way to deal with gun violence is to buy a gun. And so everybody's talking about it, and they're promoting different places, where you can get your CCW license in it. And I talked to so many different people, man. And being a former law enforcement person, I have a lot of good friends in law enforcement, and we talk about a lot of these different things. And one of the things that they talk about is that most people with firearms, I think it's close to 80% with firearms, getting people away from
them. Really?
Those are your numbers. They don't talk about this.
Now why?
Why is that? Because most people feel that they're very confident, but most people haven't shot anybody. They're not really looking to shoot anybody. And the thing about it is this: I talk about this, and I bring it up, and my condolences to the family. But I bring up Michael Termo. He was a former Milwaukee police officer. And he was shot and killed on the job, and there was a pursuit where officers saw the shooter, and they got into a confrontation with the shooter, and they shot at the shooter, and they were less than 20 feet away. And it was about three or four officers, they were shooting at the shooter, and he was shooting back at them. And I believe they shot about 14 times before he was captured, and we never hit him. But we got trained officers that are certified by the state, and they get in these type of confrontation, deadly force situation. But under that type of threat, this is how they respond. This is how they respond. So you're telling me that the average citizen that does not go through this training and deal with this type of stress, and then you get these officers that's under this stress, and most officers, and I'll tell you one thing, shooting at paper does not make you
a good shooter at dealing with people and life-threatening situations. There are so many other factors that you need to take into play, but that doesn't happen. And so one of the things that I try to do is try to empower people with personal safety skills. And most people that can handle themselves, those aren't the people that are walking around with guns. And most people will tell you, hey, well, you need to pray more. I said, well, you know, what people do is they target people that look like victims. You know, and so you have to behave in a manner and have a sense of awareness. And the more that you have people that can handle themselves, you know, like a predator, they look for the weakest link. And if I don't find that weakest link, I'm going to go elsewhere until I find it. You know, if you decrease the odds of yourself being victimized by how you carry yourself, the things that you've learned, the things that you are capable of doing, that's a good thing. But right now, they have us brainwashed in the thinking that if you got a problem, call the police. You got a problem, you need to move in the right neighborhood. And then you need to carry a gun. I remember when I was working the job, and I worked security outside of law enforcement, when I was forced out of the department, and I say that, and I wear that as a badge of honor, when I say I was forced out, I would physically stop people on the street, officers that were abusing other people. Now, other officers did the same thing, but, you know, me being a black officer, I couldn't be doing that to white officers. And so they said, okay, we're going to make sure we get rid of this guy. But so, again, that's what I do. And I'm okay with that. But what I was saying is that when you get into these situations, you know, because I can handle myself, I teach personal safety, and I've taught people how to deal with a lot of these things, and a lot of people try and say, well, you know, if you got a problem, call the police. And when we call the police, we end up usually being victimized by the police. So we don't have that confidence in calling the police or sharing that information. And I have the same thing with guys that were police officers. I have a guy that comes on my show on a regular basis. You know, he was a homicide detective. He solved over 1,000 homicides in his 30-something years with the Milwaukee Police Department. And the other officers weren't real crazy about him because, you know, he could go out in the community and treated people with dignity and respect. And so they gave him the information he needed to help solve these crimes. But these other officers, they didn't treat him and talk to him in that way. You know, and so there's a difference in how we treat people. We need to understand that we can do those things to make a difference, to make things better for us. And, you know, not operate in the mindset of those that do not care for us. You know, like a lot of times there was an incident not too long ago where a couple of Milwaukee officers were shot at. One guy, I think maybe two of them got shot or one guy shot. And one of them happened to be this black officer. And he talked about the unity of these being my brothers and sisters. And they posted all of that. And he talked about that. And I said, these same people that say that they're your brothers and sisters, when you're not in uniform, it's a good chance that they might shoot you. You know, they're not going to recognize you in that same way, shape, or form and so forth. And it happens to other people all over, and they don't talk about those things. But that's the nature. So when we say Black Lives Matter, and sadly, there are incidents like that. You have undercover officers. You had two undercover officers, one black, one white, and the black officer got beat up by other officers that he worked with. All the officers that he had roll call with, and so forth, and they beat the crap out of him. The lawsuit, he won the lawsuit, and so forth. But you know, but those things are common, and it happens more often than not. And we know of those things, and most of the time, we don't hear about those things. So when we talk about, you know, the gun violence, you know, we have to teach people, you know, how to protect themselves. And the first line of defense is not a gun. But right now we're fighting with the NRA,
You know, you have people that are making money, and most of these people are retired law enforcement people that have a firearms permit where they can certify people to carry a gun. And so you get these people, they get this certification. I was just talking to a firearms instructor the other day. We had a conversation, and we were talking about the lack of understanding that people have when they may have to deal with elements of danger. And they don't, they just don't see it coming. Whether you have a gun or not, you will be that victim because your sense of awareness, your keenness in regards to how you need to respond and so forth. And one of the things, you know, and one of the greatest martial artists I'm talking, I'll say Bruce Lee. And I'll say that because one of the things that he said, you know, about, you know, react, you know, he doesn't react. You know, he just does. Doesn't think about it, it just happens for him. Because his body is so well trained. When he senses danger and somebody, boom, 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 he just does it. Whether he needs to move out of his way, whether he needs to attack that person, whatever he needs to do, he does it without thinking. Because if you're thinking about it, you're taking time. And if you're taking time, that's giving another person the opportunity to do something. And, you know, my command officer, when I was on the streets, and he would say to me, Horace, how come people generally swing at you first and you end up hitting? And, you know, and I have a different mindset. I have a different thought process. And so I imagined myself every day before I went to work that I had to run to save my life or somebody else. And the day I couldn't do that, I'm not coming to work. I go out today. I'm no longer a law enforcement officer, but I'm thinking in my head, today is the day somebody's going to try and hurt me or hurt somebody else, and I'm going to be in this situation. What am I going to be able to do? I'm thinking about my options and the things that I can do. So I already have planned these things out. So I'm not guessing about what I should do. I already know. And I've practiced these movements and these things that I need to do. How many people think like that? How many people, and this is what we need to do. And, you know, when people have a sense that you're ready to do something, you know, when we talk about bullying, these things happen because what? You know, they find a target. They find someone that they can pick on. And then sometimes the numbers are against them. You know, and so we got to pick and choose our battles. I mean, there's a lot of different strategies that we can come up with to deal with these situations and stuff, but we need to be able to communicate those to the right people. And some of the people that we communicate these issues with don't work in our best interest. I know my brother here, you work in the streets. If somebody is being bullied and, you know, they report, I mean, so many times, you know, like when people are being bullied and we know that people, there's a high percentage of suicide, especially among younger people. And one of the reasons why that percentage is so high, because as a younger person, they don't understand the reality of that this thing is going to end. It's not going to always be that way. You know, when you're talking to somebody, because I think people from the ages from 8 to 14, 13 years old, there's a different mindset in regards to, you know, if this is ever going to stop, where somebody 16, 17 years old, you know, they've been through this, they got some life, they got some seasons, they got some time in, they understand that this is not going to always be this way. But to a younger person, they don't think it's going to end, and they take their life. And so a lot of times when these things happen, a lot of these teachers, they look for a way out. Oh, we didn't know this was happening. Oh, we don't tolerate bullying. And one of the things that they do is they drop into somebody else's lap. If there's a problem, they call the police. Now you traumatize the kids even more so by bringing the police into the situation. You know, and so there were so many different situations. And they understand this trauma that they bring. So there's a fear factor that they also introduce to these kids on a regular basis. Up, especially these black and brown kids and these students, and that's part of how they control them. And again, so
they're operating in a weakened sense. And anytime you're weak, you're going to make mistakes. And some of these mistakes, when you act out of fear and you do these different things, whether you hurt yourself or somebody else, this is what we're seeing. We're seeing the lack of control. We're not able to teach our people. We're letting other people teach us, and they're teaching us how to destroy each other. That's the way I look at it. So I like to try to empower people, to teach people how to handle themselves so that they can handle other situations. But if you're looking for other people that can do it for you in different situations, and I do understand when you're at a certain point in your life where you're no longer able to do certain things for yourself, you know, when you're older years and so forth, or maybe you got disabilities. Those are different, and there are different things that you need to do in your living situation, but you need to make those adjustments based on your living situation. But for us to think that some of these people in these situations are looking out for our best interest, that's just not what's going on. And so you wonder why these things are happening. It's not changing the underlying problems that we talked about, you know, where the violence in the education that we're seeing, in the health care. So there's all kind of violence and stuff like that that we're dealing with. So, Carl,
you're true, and I think that they need to be some type of reform for schools, public schools, but they've done mostly, you know, like you said, kids of color in public school, and you hear them playing this music, they're being, you know, boastful, and they start bullying the gang, start going against the gang. There's got to be some type of reform, like even for the police officers. You're right. A lot of, when I got my concealed, it took me an hour and a half the first time. Watch the video. There's nothing to show me how to use a gun. They sold me tasers.
Right.
Mace, you know, about $100 or something, and I'm out of here.
You know what? I'm glad you kind of talked about that process a little bit. Lawfully, you have to spend a certain amount of time, and they basically have to tell you what to use of force. You know, I was a use of force officer when I was on the police department, so I understand that. I was an instructor for use of force, so I understand. I'm a certified instructor, defense and arrest tactics. I also served on SWAT, and I've been involved in situations where I actually had to use them before to shoot a person. But the person I shot happened to be a white male, and so generally what happens is when, just to show the disparity, this is why I said happened to be a white male, I was involved in the first shooting, which an officer had to use deadly force, and I shot a guy that came at me with a scalpel. So I slashed me with a scalpel. I was going down the stairs, I knew that he was down to my partner. I actually happened to be in another room dealing with talking to the other roommate, not thinking that there was a situation going on, that this guy charges at me and swings a scalpel at me. I shoot him, and he goes down, and that's it. Long and short, after all of that, you know, one of the things that they do, and just to show you the disparity, usually when an officer gets involved in a shooting, we have a local campus where we do in-service training. And so I'm on the south side, and so MATC at the south campus. And generally, officers are invited in to share information in regards to, you know, the situation and stuff like that. But mine did not fit the narrative that they wanted to promote, because I was a black officer and I got killed a white man. Now, there were other incidents where other officers were involved in shooting incidents, but they were white officers that shot black people. And so I knew that I wasn't going to be asked, but again, it just shows you what they want to promote. One of the things, when I was even in school, and one of the things that they teach, you know, they would teach you the most dangerous people are people that look like us.
you know, and you know, but so there was racism in the teaching. And then I remember when I confronted one of the instructors, and, you know, and one of the things that they do, because I was always the only black person in the class, and so there was no Hispanic person in the class, so this Hispanic, this white officer instructor was telling us the most dangerous people in the world are Hispanic. And because, and I want you to use a lot of caution because they all carry knives. And so everybody's just writing that stuff down, and I'm looking and I'm like, hey, what, you know, and this is like my second year in the department, and I'm like, hey, why would you say something like that? That's not true. He said, I got it from a very reliable source. It was a Hispanic DA. So his statement trumps everything else that, you know, somebody else might say. The DA, he happens to be Hispanic. You know, so he speaks for all Hispanics and so forth and this and that. And we get that so often. But, you know, the thing is, you know, they just write that information down blindly. Stuff like that. These are the people that you're trusting in to look out for your safety. So you can understand why there's an extreme difference in how they approach and deal with people. Again, we talk about Black Lives Matter. You know, because people don't understand the training. That, you know, there's no way that you're going to get a carry concealed permit and you're going to be a qualified person and learn how to shoot and deal with crisis situations. A gun is an extension of your hand. So if you don't have any combat skills and you think just because you have a gun you're going to be okay, it's going to be a problem. You have to be able to keep your weapon. You need to be able to stop people from taking their weapon. We call it gun retention. You know, I teach this, teaching people how to keep their weapon and keep people from taking their and taking other people's weapon from them. You know, you have to be able to do those things. And where you lack, you know, you find something that's appropriate for you that you can use in certain situations and so forth. I mean, everybody has to make adjustments based on their own personal capabilities, what they lack in, and where they have their strengths. Everybody has it, and strengths and weaknesses, and we have to find those and be able to work with them and make those adjustments, and then we practice. And when you practice enough and you get good enough at these things, you don't have to think about it. You just do it. Hence, that was Bruce Lee would say. You know, because he practiced so much, it became a way. You know, and so we need to look at things a certain kind of way. And we're not doing those different things. And so we're letting other people tell us, define us, how we need to deal with our people. We're letting other people tell us that, you know, these are bad people. These are, you know, these are just evil people, and they just mean us harm. And, you know, and that's not the case. You know, when the former President Trump was in office, he talked about Chicago being so bad. He talked about that because he was making remarks about Obama and stuff like that. And when you talk about the top 10 deadliest places to live in America, you know, I see most violent cities. The first that they say Detroit, Michigan, St. Louis, Missouri, Memphis, Tennessee, Cleveland, Ohio. You know, and I can go on. Baltimore, Maryland, Oakland, New Orleans, Louisiana, Little Rock, Arkansas, Kansas City, Missouri, Stockton, California, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So let me count that. And so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Milwaukee is the 11th worst city to live in. And so, in regards to the most violent in America, and so we are so defined by what the news people say, and you got to understand there's so much propaganda in regards to how what they say and how they say it. because they can put a certain mindset in the minds of people to respond a certain way to other people, to people of color and so forth, to have the desensitivity towards them, and to not care about us because they feel we don't care for each other because we probably report and things. You know, you don't talk, when we talk about mass shooters and so forth, you know, we got more than 80%, close to 90% are white males. But we don't talk about that. And then when we talk about these incidents and stuff, we always try to find, what was the guy that killed all those people in Las Vegas? He shot, and I think he killed over 50 people. And they said that he was, it took him for quite some time before they even listed him as a terrorist. They listed him as a mentally ill person. You know, but they didn't want to list him as a terrorist. You know, and I think he might have killed himself during the incident. I think the police found him dead, but he had thousands of rounds and so forth. But, you know, that's what happened. I mean, there's a different narrative based on who it is. And so we always try to, you know, like they talk about, this guy was a good guy, and we don't know what made him snap. You know, but when we talk about black people, we talk about them like being a fan. You know, this is more true to their nature. You know, and we get these microaggressions all the time. You know, I have friends of mine, and, you know, I'm a big person that loves working out. I take care of myself. And people talk about, well, you know, you're genetically gifted. I work out. I know what to do. I eat right. I do all these healthy things that I'm supposed to do. I study. I understand what I need to do. I teach my family to do the same thing. No, but you guys, you know, you guys are just genetically gifted. You know, so my friend, he works out and stuff like that, but he's got a brother that's overweight. He does this and that. I said, well, you've got the same to your brother. You've got the same genetics. How come he's not this? And I go, because he made a decision to live his life a certain kind of way. So, but again, you know, you have people that...
It's yourself.
Yeah.
You learn.
Right, exactly. But, you know, you have people that just, they want to disqualify your intelligence, and we're so used to getting where we underestimate ourselves. We do. We underestimate the things that we're capable of doing. And as long as they keep us in that mindset where we continually doubt ourselves, don't believe in ourselves, then things are going to get worse. Yeah, that's, and we are in, this is what we're dealing with.
Let me ask you about the Titan situation. You know what happened last week on the plane. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on that? The guy was crashed, intoxicated Titan turned around, give him the old 1-2.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in that situation, I know, you know, these guys saw opportunities to make money. You know, I'm going to irritate this guy. He understand what the law is. You know, and Tyson, he made a comment. He's very known for, and he's a very truthful person. And social media has taught people how to be so disrespectful to people, and not worry about just punching them. And you know, and that's basically it. People feel that they have the right to insult you, to do some of the worst things to you, and they're not going to have any consequences for it. And there was a consequence for it. This guy was drunk. This guy was doing all kinds of stuff. They videotaped some of it, and some of it wasn't videotaped. So I don't know how all of that is going to end up. But, you know, more than likely there'll be some kind of settlement and stuff like that. But it's just ridiculous. But anyway, we're getting to a close of the program. And when we talk about, you know, the gun violence and what we should do, and I'm going to ask you if you want to, is this your 4,600?
Okay, let me.
I have a caller on the, right, it's the 4600.
Yeah, I heard you mention something about. I heard you mention something about St. Louis, it being a dangerous city. And I agree with you, but I know St. Louis is very bad. I grew up around the area. But it's nothing like Chicago. Nothing. Kids in Chicago, children in Chicago are wearing bulletproof backpacks, running zigzag down the street to prevent from getting hit by bullets. And as of Wednesday yesterday, you have 4,171 blacks shot by other blacks and 576 murders in 330 days. A year will be Memorial Day this next month. And that's just totally ridiculous. And the politicians there are not doing anything. Other blacks, they just moving and fleeing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, the other cities you mentioned, it goes on. It's so bad in San Francisco that Coinbase and Kraken are moving. So I don't know what you're going to do about it. We're going to try it every
right.
day.
Well,
and,
the thing is, I don't think that they tried everything. And like I said, you know, this promotion of how to deal with violence and, you know, and how people are guns rights are being violated by putting these different restrictions on and all this. There's so many different issues where we make it so accessible. But on top of everything else, make people feel so powerless and feel that what makes them powerful is having a gun.
And you know, one other thing, too. Yeah, you do have bad
mm-hmm.
police. You know that police officer, Van Dyke, shot Laquan McDowell 15 times. He should be in prison. He should be in prison because he murdered that young black man.
Yeah.
But he got off, which I think is deplorable. But really, police ain't the problem. Police is not the problem. Because like yourself, there's many, many that's out there that do the right thing. Then you got a few that does the wrong thing. So I appreciate what you've done and what you're doing now. I'm going to let you get back to your program. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Colin. Okay. We are coming up to the end of the program. We are going to be closing out. So we... If you have any questions or concerns, you can give us a call on Warriors Way, continuing the fight. WarriorsWay101@gmail.com is our email. WarriorsWay101@gmail.com for questions or comments. And we have another show that we're still working on. We did it a couple weeks ago. We did it on Facebook. Not Facebook Live, but on Zoom. So we just have to work out the technical aspects so we can get it set up to play that and hear that. And so in that show, we talked about the different gender-related issues that our young people and adults are going through their identity crisis. What masculinity is? We have... two licensed therapists, Dr. Kwaku Smith, Brother Alfonso Washington. So looking forward to getting that. So again, thank you for joining us tonight. And to Warriors Way, continuing the fight on Blog Talk Radio. We are affiliated with the Black Reality Think Team. Mr. Doc Will Rogers. Thank you for joining us. Look forward to you joining us again next Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Okay.
When the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. the war is won, we will be sure. The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, Lord.
Every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the league of justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory, the coming of the Lord. My eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes.